Okay, hello everyone and welcome to the Welly Sports Podcast, where our aim is to provide interesting sports-related conversations with anyone from the world of sport, including old Wellingtonians now involved in sport or other individuals who now work within the world of sport. For this episode, your hosts are me, Mr. Pratt, and college prefect, golfer, sports science, IB pupil, Oscar Fuentes. Oscar, would you like to give the listeners a little bit of info about yourself, your story, and I guess maybe what you've been up to a little bit in lockdown?
Yeah, so, you know, as you said, I'm a college prefect and yeah, I'm a golfer. I play off a handicap of 2 at the minute. And yeah, I've been playing since the age of 8. And yeah, what I've been doing in lockdown, you know, as much as I can do, really trying to get a few runs in there, a bit of exercise. Also trying to relax quite a lot. You know, it's quite important after 2 years of quite stressful IB, taking some time out. But yeah, we'll see what else in lockdown's got in store for me.
Cool, thank you. And then we're lucky today that our guest for today's podcast is Javier Gonzalez. Javier is a human physiologist based in the Department for Health at the University of Bath. And he's also the lead performance nutritionist for Team INEOS cycling team. His research has been aimed at understanding diet and exercise interactions in health and disease. He's got a whole host of over 70 peer-reviewed articles. And some contributions, I think, to chapters in books as well. And I'm sure I could go on, but we'll hear more from Hav in a moment. This is actually our first podcast speaking to someone outside and beyond the Wellington community, remembering that there is a world outside the gates, but hopefully talking about a topic which our listeners will find useful to learn more about, both in terms of sporting performance and from a health angle, potentially particularly whilst in lockdown. So, Hav, how are you?
Yeah, very good. Thanks. Well, considering the lockdown, at least the weather's good so far. So, trying to make the most of that.
Yeah, it's probably worth just giving the listeners the lowdown that whilst myself and Oscar are sat inside, you've got a lovely blue sky and the sun shining behind you. So very jealous.
Yeah, but jealous.
Although we are all in the UK, I will add that. Hav, would you be able to give us a bit of an overview, I guess, of your background, where you are now, and I guess sort of how you've come to be where you are now?
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, as you say, I'm an academic at the University of Bath, and also the lead performance nutritionist for Team INEOS. I guess it all goes back to when I first started playing sport at school, and cricket was a sport I was really into when I was quite young, but then once I discovered rugby, that took over. I took it a lot more seriously, and that's when I started to realize the importance of nutrition as well, and how nutrition could improve your performance, but also even make you feel a bit better about yourself and improve your overall health. So you know, I was interested in nutrition, but didn't really know what I wanted to do for a career. And kind of struggled actually to decide what course to do at university. I was looking at nutrition degrees. I didn't even know if I wanted to go to university actually. But yeah, I just loved sport. And so decided to study sports science. Found it really interesting, especially the lab based work we do on the course and the physiology side of it. So continued with a master's in exercise physiology, and that was all at Nottingham, and then moved up to Newcastle, Northumbria University in Newcastle, to do a PhD, and that's when I started to specialize a bit more in nutrition. So did my PhD in nutrition, stayed there for a year to do a postdoc, which is basically a research role, and then moved down to Bath about 6 years ago as a lecturer at Bath. So during that time, I also did some ad hoc nutrition consultancy work with athletes. I actually started that in my PhD. I think the first role I did was with Sunderland Football Club, because my PhD supervisor was the nutritionist there. So I was helping her out. and then kind of wasn't really looking for any particular career change, but just spotted this role with Team Ineos. It was advertised just before Christmas, and kind of since I gave up rugby union like over 10 years ago, I've got quite into cycling and running and kind of the endurance sports, and it's also where most of my research has led. So this role with Team Ineos came up, and thought it'd be a great time to give it a go.
And presumably, that's been an interesting transition with sort of probably moving to that role just pre-lockdown, sort of I guess straight into virtual work with the team.
Yeah. In a way, it's probably been a bit of a blessing in disguise, in that I started the role when they were pretty much mid-season, so right in the swing of racing, and did manage to get to a couple of races in Belgium just before lockdown. And it would have been a hectic start. At least this lockdown period gives me a bit of time to do a bit of the planning and strategy type work, gives me a bit of a cushion. But yeah, like you say, it's a bit of an odd time. I would say that the team are actually pretty well set up to the scenario, because they've got about 30 riders, and they're based all over the world. So even under normal conditions, when it's racing season, they'll have riders down in South America, across various countries there, and spread all across Europe. So they're actually really well set up to have kind of these types of calls remotely, and yeah, well used to that.
It's probably almost become a normal, or relatively normal anyway, that kind of quite disparate working environment with people spread out like that.
Yeah, exactly. And in a way, you've got to look on the positives, haven't you? And it gives you new ways to communicate, and you can be creative and try and come up with solutions to things. So yeah, that's what we're teaching at, and with the nutrition role.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. Okay. Well, rather than getting too much into that, we'll kick things off with sort of a fun style question. And I guess I'll ask you both it. Have I'll come to you first, and then Oscar, I'll ask afterwards. Just to give the listeners a little insight. If you were going to a desert island, potentially a lockdown situation on a desert island, maybe not that difficult to think about at the moment, given the circumstances. But if you had to take three things with you, what are you taking with you, Hav?
Well, I suppose I really should say my wife, number one.
Good answer.
And then I'm a bit of an exercise addict, so I take my trainer so I could at least go running, and probably some resistance bands as well to keep the gun show going.
You've still got desert island, you've still got to look after the gun show. Oscar, to you, same question.
Yeah, well, I'm not as much of an exercise addict, but yeah, something to do there would be good. So, you know, maybe like a football or something to keep me entertained. Probably take my phone as well. And then, really don't know for the last thing, to be honest.
I'm worried you're taking your phone. You're assuming there's electricity on this desert island.
Oh, well, I mean, you know, I'll take a portable charger and we'll be fine.
I thought you'd have at least gone for a wedge or something in the bag to the desert island.
Oh, yeah. Sand. Golf clubs, 100%. Yeah.
Cool. Well, that's a little bit of background on our guest today. And Oscar, I'll hand over to you.
Yeah, so Hav, I've got a question for you. Have you got any general advice for people with what they should be eating, what they shouldn't be eating in lockdown?
Yeah, I think probably the biggest change with lockdown is people's routines. So almost rather than from what they're eating, actually the timing is also really important. So if you think about how our body normally works, we've got biological clocks in every cell of our body that tick over, and when they're working well, we're healthy and we feel normal. And you really notice when they go out of sync. If you ever have jet lag or work shift patterns, then you can feel pretty bad when those body clocks are out of sync. And there are kind of three main things that help set those rhythms in the body. One is sunlight or light in general. So it's kind of why looking at your phone just before bed isn't a good idea. The other thing is exercise. And the third thing is diet. So when you eat helps to set those rhythms. So trying to keep a consistent pattern of the regular meals throughout a day and making sure you're not eating late at night and fasting overnight, that's probably the main thing. There are other things that are useful to focus on in eating during lockdown. That it's mainly your typical healthy diet. So focusing on fruit and vegetables, some lean sources of protein as well.
Yeah, and I myself have done this. It's a lot of people have changed from going to the gym and doing sort of weights, weight training, and they've changed to more endurance fitness, such as, you know, going on 10K runs every now and again and that kind of thing. Is there any advice to this kind of people that you could give?
So one thing I'd say is you can still do four different forms of resistance training. So if you haven't got heavy weights, then doing body weight exercises or similar things around the house can still help preserve some of the muscle mass that you've got. And the main thing to focus on is trying to go to is typically termed momentary muscular failure, but essentially fatigue. So if you're doing press-ups, just go until you can't do another press-up. You push your muscle to its limit, and that's kind of the real stimulus for muscle to grow. So as long as you push the muscle to that limit, for the muscle, it's just like it was lifting a heavy weight in a way. So if you are into muscle mass and that kind of and strength gains and stuff like that, so let's say you're a rugby player, for example, then you can still do that type of work. If you're getting into endurance sports more, then probably the hottest thing in nutrition in the last few years has been something called carbohydrate periodization. So the idea is that high carb diets have their place and low carb diets have their place, but they all have their own place, their right place at the right time. So you don't want to always have a high carb diet and you don't want to always have a low carb diet, but you want to fluctuate it throughout even the week and even the day. So as an example, if you're going out for a slow jog, it's not necessarily going full gas, high intensity, then you're better off having either a low carbohydrate meal before or even doing it first thing in the morning fasted. Whereas if you're looking for optimal performance and it's a really hard session, then you want to aim for high carbohydrate availability. So a high carbohydrate pre-exercise meal.
Okay, that sounds good. And for elite athletes who find that they can't train in their sport, say, a rugby player who doesn't really have access to the kind of training facilities that they would, is there anything you could recommend that they, in the way that they eat or how they eat, that could maintain their muscle as well as not put on too much weight?
Yeah. The first thing I say is it's difficult. So for muscle mass, there's almost no substitute for actual exercise, the lifting the weight itself or doing a press up. But nutrition plays an important role alongside that. So exercise comes first, if you like, but nutrition is second to that. And the key principles with trying to maintain muscle mass or maximize muscle mass if you are going through training is overall protein intake. So you want a reasonable amount of protein. And we know that about 30 grams of protein is enough to maximize your muscle growth with each meal. So if you're between 30 grams of protein in, you'd be maximizing the muscle building response. And to put that in perspective, you're looking at something like a pint of milk would have about 20 grams or so of protein in. In terms of the type of protein to focus on, mainly animal-based proteins are the most potent sources of protein for muscle building. So milk, chicken, eggs and so on. That's not to say that vegetable-based proteins can't do the job. It's just on a gram-for-gram basis, you need more vegetable-based protein. So if you're thinking like pea protein or soy protein, you typically need more more protein to get the same response. And then the third point is really timing. So a lot of people would have a low protein breakfast. So they might have some toast and a tea or orange juice. And then they might have quite a lot of protein at dinner. And the main aim with protein intake is to try and spread it out across the day. So you can't really, I say with the kind of 20 to 30 grams, you maximize the response. Having 50 grams means that you're essentially wasting 20 grams of it. So you're better off spreading that out throughout the day and having it earlier in the morning.
I don't know if it's unique to me, Oscar. I don't know if you've had this, that we're obviously now all sat at home working, majority anyway. And I'm finding snacking is a very popular pastime in my household now. In between lessons, in between meetings, it's easy to grab a quick coffee and whatever chocolate or biscuit might be to hand. Do you think that's maybe a common pattern, and what sort of ways are there, or I guess more healthy snacks potentially to look at?
And I'm as guilty as you for that. My home office at the moment is in the kitchen, so the snack cupboard is too near and very tempting. I guess one approach is just to try and avoid snacking altogether, to try and put them in a place where they're out of sight and out of mind. And then the second option is if you'd like to snack, then you could go for healthier options, fruit or carrot sticks and hummus, that kind of thing. I know it doesn't sound nearly as appetizing as the bar biscuit, but
the carrot and hummus with the coffee might not be the normal combination. Might have to just separate that up a little bit. I'm interested there, just going back a little bit, have you mentioned sort of trying to keep routine, which I suspect is maybe something people have struggled with sort of increased screen time and different working hours and things like that. But you'd probably recommend trying to, and I guess I'm thinking of Wellington pupils here, trying to sort of maintain, I guess, what their normal daily patterns might have looked like at school. Which I know for some might be difficult if they're in different locations in the world, but in general, that would kind of be the advice you'd go for on that front.
Yeah, exactly. Try and get up at the same time of day. And if you can, expose yourself to some bright light, some sunlight earlier on in the day. Again, go to bed at a similar time and eat meals at a similar time, and try to avoid light kind of 3 hours before bed. So, ideally avoid looking at screens at all, but if you are going to look at them, then use the filter on the screen so it filters out blue light.
Cool, thank you. And last one, just on the sort of the school day, I'm interested that sort of I don't know if it's every class will experience this, but there's often the post lunchtime lull, I would say, in the lesson which follows lunch. Oscar, I suspect you know what I'm referencing.
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Is there anything that can be done to avoid that? Because I suspect it's a response to the food we've just taken in.
Yeah, it's a great question, and like everyone, I don't think we really know what causes it actually. So just kind of anecdotally, it tends to be more with a larger meal. So you could just try eating a smaller meal, a lighter salad based meal, something like that, and if you enjoy coffee, then have a post-lunch coffee just to keep going. But yeah, I don't think we really know what causes that post-lunch lull, but I definitely suffer from it myself.
If the answer is another coffee, I'll happily have a coffee before going back to the rest.
Yeah, and of course with me being half Spanish, I'll just take the siesta.
Oh, 100%.
Just moving into your sort of work within pro sport at the moment, and I guess with Ineos, So you sort of detailed how that has recently come about. I'm just wondering kind of what work in that environment looks like for you at the moment, given that there's no competition happening. Sort of what are the priorities, I guess, you're working with people?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things from the rider perspective is we don't really know when races are going to start again. There's a provisional calendar, but as of yet, everything's so uncertain. So we're just trying to keep the riders at a good base level. It's almost like an extra off season in the middle of their normal season. And then once we know with a bit more certainty when the races are, we can ramp up the intensity training and get them in peak condition. Kind of for me, more broadly in my role, it's an opportunity to look at some other things. So there's a few kind of ideas where, like novel approaches that we're looking to use with the riders with nutrition that we might not be sure whether they work or not. So this is an opportunity where they're all at home and training on the turbo trainers that we can explore some of those options that we wouldn't be able to do during racing. So that's one area we're trying to make the most of the opportunity of this lockdown. And then the other is just reviewing the general protocols of the team, and especially going back into racing in the current climate. So Team Ineos have always had really strong hygiene practices. So they view any lost day due to illness, it's a day that the rider could be training and improving. So they're really stringent with hand gel and hygiene with food practices and everything. But we're just reviewing that again to make sure that with the current situation, that it's really as dialed as it could be.
And I guess like that's actually probably what you referenced there was sort of looking at new and novel approaches. As I guess sort of the silver lining, if there ever will be one, as we hopefully come out of lockdown and whatever the new normal becomes, might be sort of having found a new and better way of doing something which you might not have found otherwise.
Yeah, exactly. Give us an extra little competitive advantage when we do return to racing.
It's coming. I just I read earlier that Team Ineos doing, you referenced sort of hand gels there. They're obviously doing some quite cool stuff there with they're producing hand gel for the frontline NHS workers as well. I guess that's quite a cool thing for them to be being able to contribute something to the pandemic in that way and help society as well.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, so I should say Team Ineos, the cycling team, is essentially owned by Ineos, the larger company, and that parent company up until recently they produced chemicals for various different products, and they realized they produce all of the raw materials for hand gel. So when it all kicked off with the COVID-19 situation, they thought, well, let's try and do something positive, and they decided to change their production to this hand gel and give it out free to the NHS, and not only hospitals in the UK, actually they're spreading all around the world now. So Belgium, France, Germany, and just in the last few days they've spread to the US as well. And it's great for the cycling team as well, because normally we provide value back to Ineos in terms of exposure when we're racing, and as we're not allowed to race at the moment, we can't provide them value in that sense. So it's an opportunity for us to provide them value by helping them with distribution and logistics of the hand gel.
It's probably not something you expected to be experiencing from that point of view.
And I should say I'm not really involved in that. It's mainly our operations team who are normally moving us around to races, and now they're moving the hand gel around. So I can't take any credit myself.
I suspect with races going on all over the world, they're pretty good at that logistics side of things though.
Oh yeah, definitely. They're so organized, and definitely makes our lives easy.
And just this last one on that sort of pro sport environment before I hand back to Oscar, the working with different athletes, different individuals, I presume part of your role is sort of understanding, sort of working with each of those individuals, but both as a human being, but also in terms of their physical makeup and how they respond to nutrition.
Yeah, absolutely. That's so important. And I think you tend to find, based on their sport, you get a broadly similar type of athlete. So, for example, cyclists are very different to, say, rugby players, where cyclists do like, in general, data, and they're quite kind of calm and considered in the way they approach things. But having said that, even within cycling, you do get different characters. So a big part of the role is just trying to understand how do they like to understand things. Some of them might like just a chat. Others might actually like some data on a slide or some kind of visual way to interpret it. So yeah, a lot of it is trying to understand what their preferences are in terms of how they receive information. And as you say, also their kind of dietary preferences and how they might respond individually.
Yeah, nice. So Hav, I wanted to find out a bit more about your experience of sport at school. So I heard earlier that you said that you started off as a cricketer, but then moved on to rugby and you loved rugby. What was it about rugby that really made you love it?
Yeah, it was probably because I'm not particularly skillful in any sport. And, and whilst there are skills in rugby, there's a bit more of, I guess, that fitness can get you a long way and kind of brute force. So I found a more direct relationship between the amount of effort you put in and the result that comes out. And even within rugby, it's partly why, my strength, if you like, I was never particularly a good rugby player, but my strength within that was fitness. And I used to just try and be as aerobically fit as I could. And I was a open side flanker for most of my time. So I'd just make sure I was at every breakdown I could be at, and a bit of a workhorse. And that was kind of how I added value to the team, I guess. That was the main reason for switching from cricket to rugby, poor skills.
I'm just looking forward to the debate it will spark with the Wellington rugby community that rugby's a less sport, less skillful sport than cricket. I don't want to go into it now, but I'm just going to leave that there.
Saying you found this like love of rugby, and you would always find you were one of the more fitter players on the pitch. Do you have any sort of like favourite moments of when you were playing rugby at school that you can remember that just made you feel really good?
Two kind of spring to mind. One was when Johnny Wilkinson came to coach our team. So it was great to meet an idol like that. And then kind of a personal experience on the pitch was just a game that I think we were kind of maybe 3 points down, and the other team had a penalty 10 metres out from our try line. And being the one to make kind of the try saving tackle, that's a memorable experience, definitely.
Yeah, it sounds great. What sport do you like to do now? To sort of keep yourself entertained and stay fit.
Yeah. I still enjoy kind of resistance exercise. Kind of didn't ever stop that even when I gave up rugby. But in terms of competing in sport, it's mainly endurance events. So I normally do one triathlon a year, gradually increasing the distance. So the last one I did was a half Ironman. And running events as well. So I've only done half marathons. I should do a marathon one day, hopefully. But got into my endurance sports now.
Yeah, that's really good.
You've only got yourself to blame, Hav, if your nutrition's not quite up to scratch.
Exactly. Yeah. I do get it wrong now and again, and no excuses really.
And when did you make the change from taking part in sport to sort of analysing your nutrition? When was it that it clicked that nutrition was something really, really important?
Yeah, I guess when I was playing rugby, it was just understanding the very basics of this is fueling me to do the exercise. But probably the kind of light bulb moment for me was in my sports science degree. And it was in my second year, we were doing a lab class, and I was the participant, and you basically had to do a 2 kilometer rowing time trial, and you did it with and without having sodium bicarbonate, so baking soda basically, that you can just buy off the shelf in a shop, but it's a common nutritional supplement that a lot of track cyclists use. It seems to improve performance in events that range between 1 and 9 minutes, so you kind of sprint type events, middle distance running, that kind of thing. And just being a participant and having that sodium bicarbonate and feeling the difference was just incredible for me. And it kind of, sparked a light bulb in my head. And I thought, well, that's really cool, really powerful that you can get something off the shelf that you eat and improves your performance so effectively. What really interested me was to try to understand how that was working. And that was when I really got into kind of the research side of things and wanted to go down that route.
Yeah, that sounds quite good, yeah.
Hab, just to sort of come back to me, and I guess we'll sort of try and get to a point where we wrap things up and you can enjoy that sunny blue sky behind, and Oscar and I can maybe nip outside for our sort of government allowed one exercise a day in whilst the sun's out. I'll ask a sort of a question of both of you, and I guess more broadly in sport. Have you sort of had to pick what one athlete, whether current or sort of through history, that you think's sort of been the best? If you to sort of put you on the spot and say who you think that might be, and then Oscar, I'll come to you afterwards.
Yeah, so I've already mentioned him actually, but I think Johnny Wilkinson, just for all-round professionalism and being kind of a nice person on and off the pitch, but also such a high performer.
Yeah, for me, I mean, it kind of depends. If we're talking about sort of raw talent, I'd have to go with Tiger Woods. Just the way he dominates every time he plays, and you know, the like psychological strength he has. But then if we were talking about if they were, you know, nice as a person or anything, I'd probably have to go with, you know, someone like Justin Rose, who I had the opportunity to meet. And yeah, even when, you know, he wasn't in front of cameras or anything, he was still a really down to earth, really nice guy.
Just to come back to you, two popular sort of Wellington sports there on sort of the rugby front and the golfers as well that we have here. If you, from a nutrition angle, two sort of very different activities, sort of golf potentially, you know, rounds over multiple days, whereas at rugby, sort of an activity between, you know, depending whether you play a full game or a half, sort of up to an hour and a half in length, I guess, sort of the nutritional demands and the differences that exist there and what you reckon on that front?
Yeah, as you say, hugely different. And even within, certainly within rugby, depending on your position, the demands will be completely different. With golf, obviously a key thing is focus for prolonged periods of time. So caffeine can be useful there, and ensuring your blood sugar levels stable. So actually it's probably worth snacking around the course on some carbohydrate snacks, but not overdoing it, because of course you're not expending as much energy as you would do with some other forms of sport. And with rugby, of course, there's a huge component of it is trying to build and maintain muscle mass at certain points of the season. And then during games, there's a huge demand on carbohydrate stores with the high intensity type activity. But it depends on the position and the amount of game time they have.
There's really, really sort of varied demands there, aren't there? Oscar, just to come back to you, meeting Justin Rose, pretty cool experience. What if you had to take one thing from meeting him, what would it be? Did he give any good words of wisdom?
Oh, it's mainly just, you know, if you really want to make it, then you just have to work hard, even when everything's, you know, not going well, because, you know, he himself had been going through, he's gone through a couple rough patches lately, but, you know, he came back and he was back to world number one. And, yeah, it's interesting to meet people around the Hampshire area who knew him when he was a junior golfer, and how, you know, he was good, but he wasn't the best at all times. That, you know, it's okay to sort of fail and then pick yourself back up and just work even harder. Yeah, that's probably what I'd take away from what he said to me.
Not a bad life lesson, that, I suspect.
Yeah, and, exactly.
Last one, have favourite moment in sporting history?
Probably England winning the World Rugby World Cup.
I was going to say, I had to stay on theme, didn't it? The Wilkinson drop goal.
Yeah.
Oscar, same to you.
Yeah, for me, it would probably be the Ryder Cup, where I think it was the 2014 one, where they were all, you know, Europe was losing, and then Ian Poulter gave a massive speech about Seve in the changing rooms, and they all turned it around on the last day and won it. So that would probably be it for me.
Two pretty big sporting moments there. I don't think we can argue with either of those. Oscar and Ardo, have you got any other questions to have there? Are you happy?
I haven't got any other questions for you. Have you got anything you want to say to the people of Wellington?
Thanks for the invite to the podcast, and I've visited actually just to see Dan on site. So it's a lovely facility you've got there, and yeah, wish I had a school like that with those sporting facilities.
Thank you.
Yeah, so very lucky to have the facilities we've got. I think I can agree with that, as I'm sure the pupils will do as well. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, and I'm sure you've probably got some planning and bits and pieces like that to be cracking on with for hopefully what will be the future of professional sport from that angle when lockdown starts to lift. So thank you very much for your time.
Thanks. Very much, Al. Good to meet you.
Oscar, just to wrap things up there, having finished that, if you were to sort of pick some key takeaway messages there, particularly if we sort of think on the nutrition front from a health angle, maybe to begin with, is there anything there, or from a sporting angle that you think Habs mentioned which is important?
Yeah, so I think the main thing for lockdown especially, but even outside of lockdown, is to stick to a routine. You know, he mentioned how, you know, to feel good, your biological clock has to stay in check. So obviously there's sunlight, there's exercise, but there's a routine of your diet. So it's, you know, not skipping meals and sticking to the routine. You know, if you skip lunch, for example, then you're going to feel exhausted in the afternoon. So yeah, sticking to a routine, I think, it's one of the main things.
Yeah, I think it's probably good advice, and something that maybe people have struggled with the change in circumstances and changes to the new norm that we're currently in.
Yeah, exactly.
And anything there that sort of interested you from sort of on the working on the more sort of elite sports side of things, do you think? I mean, I suspect routine is probably still important.
Yeah, but something I've mentioned was you know, how different rugby players might need completely different diets. From a golfer's point of view, you know, we all pretty much need the same diet, because, you know, even though we're different people, we're playing pretty much exactly the same sport. Whereas with rugby players, how there's all the different positions, it's not just all about building muscle mass. Some positions will be more inclined to develop their endurance on top of, you know, instead of their muscle mass and that kind of thing. And I found it quite interesting. I thought that, you know, each sport had a specific diet or a type of diet, but turns out it doesn't.
Yeah, the different, I guess rugby's quite unique, isn't it, from the very different positional demands that exist within it, from a fullback to a front row forward.
Yeah.
Whereas I guess on the golf front, you're sort of the aim for all of you is the same in terms of taking as few shots as possible to get the ball in the hole.
Yeah, exactly.
Perfect. Well, Oscar, thank you very much for your time. And I hope you sort of you've learned something from that potentially that will be useful for your own golf from that perspective.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, I'll try stick to more of a routine when I'm eating now, and maybe have a few snacks. We'll see.
Yeah, Joe, you're going for the carrot and the hummus and the coffee.
Yeah.
Might be a new trend.
Might have started something here.
Oscar, thank you very much. And to all the listeners, I hope you found something useful in that today to take out, whether it be from a health perspective, looking at things that have mentioned that Oscar picked up on there in terms of routine, and also potentially from a sports performance angle. And we look forward to our next guest in future weeks. So, Oscar, thank you very much. See you soon.
Thanks very much. See you later. Warm talking, feeling on a cloud, no, of my own design.